Joining us now on the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel is Spencer Holbrook of Letterman Row. They covered the Ohio State Buckeyes 4-on-3. And Spencer, thanks for coming and talking a little bit about Ryan Day's program and the national champions.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always appreciate it.
Let's jump right in. If we were having this conversation a year ago, we would be talking about a different Ryan Day, a different program, a program that hadn't done what they had set out to do yet under his tenure. Way different now. What are the feelings like in Columbus now that Ryan Day did reach the mountaintop and has a national championship for the first time since 2014?
Well, I think this is like the perfect conversation for us to have, because in a lot of ways, I think Ryan of last year looks a little bit like Sark this year, like bringing a lot back, got national championship expectations, haven't reached where you want to be, have gone to the semifinal a couple times. Like, in a lot of ways on the field, it does look kind of similar. I know Sark beats his rival more often than Ryan does, but I guess that's another story. I think that the tenor has just entirely shifted. Obviously, that month between the Michigan game and then the game against Tennessee was bad. I mean, the way that Ryan Day was talked about and some of the fan reaction and some of the fan threats and things like that, it got really ugly. And that Tennessee game was so healing for so many people just to watch Ohio State do that to an SEC team. No offense to Texas, but a traditional SEC team, like you get one of those traditional SEC helmets in the horseshoe and you beat up on them. It did a lot for the program. And in some ways it was like, well, is everything gravy now? And then after the Oregon Rose Bowl, it was like, well, is everything okay now? And then it kept snowballing, and then they hoist the trophy and they have the celebration in the horseshoe, and Ryan Day gets the contract extension. And now he's going to go in the College Football Hall of Fame, and he's going to might have a statue at Ohio State. Like, it's crazy what's changed. And so last year was a team that hadn't done anything, but had a ton of leadership coming back, had all of its weapons coming back. This year is a new leadership group. It's a new quarterback. It's a new almost everything except for the head coach and some of the big stars. So, yeah, a lot of change this offseason. It's definitely not the team that Texas saw in the Cotton Bowl, but there's still a lot to be excited about on this Ohio State roster, starting at the very top with maybe the best player on offense and the best player on defense in college football.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next. You know, we'll talk about coordinators and play callers and the changes there. But the guy at the top, Ryan Day, stays the same. And maybe two of the best players in college football are still around. We'll get to quarterback as well. We know there are defensive changes. 14 players sent off to the draft. But Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs are still there. How are those players? I know Caleb Downs is very, very likely his last year in college football. Jeremiah Smith has one more. But how do both of those guys, how much are they going to be relied on this year to, especially for a game like Texas in week one, really carry things until full identities and full knowns of strengths and weaknesses are figured out before they get to Big Ten play?
Yeah, it's interesting because Caleb, I'll start on defense. Caleb is one of three starters returning on this Ohio State defense. Well, the good news for him is one of them's at corner, so they've got a proven guy out there on the outside, and one of them is at linebacker who's going to be like the captain of this team in Sonny Styles, who was the one who hit Gunnar Helm over the middle on the tight end on that drop against Texas, just trying to give fans, you know, a reminder of who these people are. So, you know, I think that it's interesting that Caleb is going to have to be like a point man for that secondary, but he's not going to have to lead the entire defense. And I think that's important. Sonny Styles is a guy from Columbus who has Buckeye in his blood. He understands what it's like. Now he's a national champion. He wanted to prove some more, so he comes back for his senior year. And it does kind of take a little bit of that pressure off of Caleb as being like the guy, the only name back on this defense. So I think there's some help there for Caleb. But you're right, he is going to be the catalyst, probably the face of this defense and one of the faces of the sport, quite frankly. Then you move over to Jeremiah Smith. He's going to have to do a lot, but I don't know how much he's going to have to do in terms of just catching the ball. Carnell Tate still exists, and Brandon Innes is coming along as a former five-star prospect who everybody wanted. Mylon Graham is another former five-star prospect who's coming into his second year. They added Max Clair, the tight end from the transfer portal from Purdue. You can take a lot of Jeremiah away if you can, I guess, and double him and bracket him and do all those things. But Ohio State and Brian Hartline, and I'm kind of preaching to the choir talking to Texas fans here, like Brian Hartline does Brian Hartline things, and so the other receivers are going to be really good too. And so in a way that Caleb is going to have to do a lot for this defense and getting everybody ready, Jeremiah might have to play decoy a little bit, But at the same time, he is going to be such a face of the team because he's a face of college football that it's going to be interesting to see how they move him around and use him wisely, if you will.
Yeah, I think a lot of Texas fans may look at Jeremiah's stat line, just one catch for 3 yards in that Cotton Bowl and think like, oh, they can do it again. Well, you lost Jahdae Barron, and even so, they didn't let Jeremiah Smith go without two guys over him. As a result, that's why all the other receivers had big games, and you know, obviously Trevion had his big game as well. We'll go with the new face on the defensive side of the ball, especially at defensive coordinator. Jim Knowles goes across state lines, goes to Penn State. Ryan Day brings in Matt Patricia. And, you know, it's one of those situations where you look and, yes, he's an NFL head coach, but what happened in the NFL? What's happened since? Why didn't he go with Bill Belichick? A lot of different questions. But as far as making the change from Knowles to Patricia, what are some of the things that Ohio State may do similarly or may do differently on defense?
Yeah, I think you'll see them stick with the 4-2-5. I think there's reason to believe that that's going to be the base defense, what Ryan Day really likes from his defense, the flexibility that having either a third linebacker or a safety hybrid corner or do-it-all player there in the nickel role. Ryan Day liked that a lot, and I think Matt Patricia liked that a lot as well. Moving the way he used to operate over to the college game, I think the 4-2-5 will help him, you know, be multiple. That fourth defensive lineman doesn't always have to be a defensive lineman truly. I think he's willing to fluctuate in his scheme a little bit more than Knowles was. For everything that great that Jim Knowles is, and I think he is the best defensive coordinator in college football, you know, he's kind of set in his ways of 4-2-5, and you know, the way that he kind of ran things at Ohio State was last year is how you're going to see him running at Penn State. I think Patricia's got a little bit more flexibility in what he wants to do, how he wants to deploy all of that. I think you'll see like a Sonny Styles used maybe on the edge a little bit, or Arvo Reese, another athlete used on the edge. You'll see the secondary kind of try to trick people a little bit in what they're doing, especially in that first game. No film at all on this Patricia defense. He stayed in one coverage, one formation the entire spring game just to make sure that nothing is on film. And so your guess is almost as good as mine on what we will see from this defense. But from what we've heard, Patricia's going to be a little bit more willing to be flexible and maybe exploratory in how he uses all of this talent. And I think that's a good thing because, you know, I thought that Texas did a good job last year and Sark had a good plan against Jim Knowles. And so I think you'll have to throw some different things at them if you're Matt Patricia. But yeah, it's going to look a little different, but I think a lot of the base stuff is going to be the same.
Going over to offense, obviously Ryan Day has his offensive bona fides and Brian Hartline stepping in on the offensive coordinator role. It didn't go great last time they tried it. I know there may have been some other extenuating circumstances as to why, but they're giving it another go. What do you think that's going to look like? And maybe how has Brian Hartline evolved since the last time he was given the play calling responsibilities?
Yeah, if you ask Brian Hartline, he's a completely different person just because one of the words that everybody used around him this spring was the word organized. He was ready to go in spring meetings. He was making sure that he wasn't taking anything away from his receiving coaching while he's also being the offensive coordinator. He's learned a lot in watching Bill O'Brien for 1 month as the Ohio State offensive coordinator. He watched Chip Kelly for a year. He studied under Ryan Day now since 2017 when Day arrived and Brian Hartline was just a graduate assistant wide receivers coach. So, you know, he's learned a ton. And I think it was as much Ryan Day not being willing to give up the play calling in 23 as it was maybe Hartline not being ready for it. And I think they've kind of come to an understanding that Hartline is ready for that now. And so will you see a little bit more of a pass-happy Ohio State attack? There's potential for that. I think Brian Hartline might always fall back on his priors at times. And I'm anxious to see how he kind of combats that or how he and Ryan Day work through that and making sure that the run game is always exactly what Ohio State wants it to be with Tyler Bowen, the new offensive line coach, and he's the run game coordinator. So it's going to be interesting. Hartline has learned a lot. He's evolved a lot. He's developed a lot. And I'm excited for him because it's clear that he's grown a lot and he's still the best receivers coach in the country. So if you can keep him happy as the offensive coordinator while making sure that he's doing his thing on the recruiting trail and recruiting wide receivers at the level that he does, then you have to do it. And Ohio State has given him the opportunity now to call plays. Now, if push comes to shove and they score 3 points against Texas, you might see, you know, some questions start to come about of whether he actually was ready for this. But all signs point to him, you know, evolving enough in the last 2 years that this isn't 2023 anymore. And Ryan Day officially did hand that play sheet over, and he likes the returns so far from Brian Hartline.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
One of the big decisions that Day, Hartline, everybody involved is going to have to make is who's going to throw to Jeremiah Smith and Brandon Ennis and Carnell Tate in that crew. And Max Clair, who I'm glad you mentioned, Texas really pursued him out of the portal back in the winter, and he's decided to stick in Big Ten country. But the quarterback battle, you got Lincoln Kineholtz, the South Dakota product, have Julian Sayin from California. Texas recruited Julian Sayin, but he wasn't going to sign in the class right after Arch Manning. Alabama, short-time transfer, leaves when Nick Saban does, ends up at Ohio State. What's going on with the quarterback battle between two guys? One more experience in the program, one entering just his second season there.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Ryan Day said last week, actually, or maybe 2 weeks ago, that heading into the spring game, Lincoln might have had a little bit of an edge on Julian just because of the consistency of the spring. But it's really hard to ignore what Julian Sayin did in the spring game. He was really, really sharp. He was good. He was good down the field. He was good intermediate. He hit his checkdowns when he needed to, even though there wasn't a lot of pressure on those guys, obviously, in the spring game. They even went live this spring a little bit and made the quarterbacks live just to get them a look at what football is supposed to look like in college, because Kienholz has one career legitimate opportunity under his belt, and it was the Cotton Bowl in 2023 when he was just thrown out there in Devin Brown's absence, who got hurt in the first half, and Lincoln was just thrown in there as a true freshman who had only been on campus since June. It was really ugly. Lincoln wasn't ready for that. I think he's way more ready right now than he was then. But Julian, you know, in limited time that he's been on the field, he's looked good. But in practice last year, we saw it time and time again. He looked the part. You don't want to talk about a quarterback in the state of Texas who played football at Ohio State when you compare to other five-star talents that are coming in the pipeline. But the release and the accuracy that we saw in practice last year from a freshman, Julian Sayin, is not all that different from what we saw early in the developmental stages of C.J. Stroud. And so that's got a lot of Ohio State fans excited that, like, hey, this is a five-star prospect from the state of California who has a quick release, isn't the biggest guy in the world. And CJ, you know, believe it or not, now you look at him, he's huge. Wasn't the biggest guy in the world until really his second year starting. So, you know, there are a little bit of similarities there. And I think that's got fans excited just because of the release angle and the, you know, everything that everybody loves to fall in love with now. Julian's got it. I think Julian will eventually win this job. I think he will take the first snaps against Texas on August 30th. But Lincoln Kienholz is pushing him. And, you know, for a battle between a can't-miss five-star prospect and a four-star kind of under-the-radar guy from South Dakota, this is a really, really good battle and one that Ryan Day is kind of enjoying watching play out. I think he probably wishes he could just have a guy set to start to lead this team. But that battle is going to go into August, and I'm excited to see how it shakes out. I do think Sagan's going to win it, and I think you'll see Sagan take those first snaps against Texas there at the end of August.
You talked a little bit about on defense, three returners and some of the guys who are going to make an impact there. You talked about the wide receivers, the tight end, the quarterbacks. I know James Peoples and C.J. Donaldson are going to be asked to do a lot of the running game. But on offensive line, Ohio State is just like Texas, losing four starters, two to the draft and two unsigned. And one of them was Seth McLaughlin, who is one of the best centers in the country. So what does the Ohio State offensive line look like heading into this upcoming season?
Yeah, I can't believe Seth McLaughlin wasn't drafted. I know that's not what we're talking about here, but, like, man, he was so good. And I just can't wrap my head around the Remington winner not getting drafted, but I guess that's beside the point. Ohio State brought in Ethan Onyanwa, who I know Texas had conversations with from Rice. Ohio State really likes what they got out of him in the spring. I think he's going to be the starting left tackle. They went and poached Phillip Daniels, four-game starter from Minnesota, at right tackle. He's going to be in a battle for right tackle with Austin Sarabell. Now, this is where it gets a little confusing. So, Ohio State lost four starters, yes. But Ohio State also returns four starters in a way. because there were so many injuries last year on that offensive line. When Donovan Jackson moved to left tackle because Josh Simmons tore his ACL against Oregon, Austin Saraville, Luke Montgomery, and Tegra Shibola, all three rotated at the two guard spots. So they took turns starting. They took turns having reps. So they all three got starting experience last year. Carson Hinsman was the starting center in 2023. Wasn't ready for that. They brought in Seth McLaughlin. Hinsman played guard a little bit last year. Then when McLaughlin got hurt, he played the final six games of the year at center. And so as much as they lost all of those guys, they also returned three starting guards, and they returned their starting center, who was the starter for the college football playoff. So it's interesting that you can put numbers on it, but the numbers are a little deceiving. They love the interior of this offensive line with with Carson Hinsman, with Luke Montgomery, with Tegra Shibola, with Austin Saraville. Like, all four of those guys kind of interchangeable, with Hinsman staying at the center spot. And then Saraville might play right tackle or right guard, depending on how well Philip Daniels does. So a lot to like with this offensive line. It's going to come down to how ready the tackles are, which is a little scary when you consider that August 30th, they're going to see Colin Simmons. We're not going to just hide from that. Ohio State's going to have a plan against him. I think there's some tight end stuff involved there, and there's going to have to be, with chipping and helping and making sure the running backs know their responsibilities as well. But if the tackles can come along and do their part, Ohio State loves what it has on the interior of this offensive line, and I think they're going to rely on that to be a strength of this team.
I know, just from an expectation standpoint, Ohio State doesn't lower them ever, no matter what happens, no matter how many national titles, Big Ten titles they win. I know there's one game they really want to win, and it's at the end of the season. But what are those expectations looking at the team, maybe with some inexperience in some spots, but with two of the best players in college football on that team? Are the expectations still Big Ten, beat Michigan, go all the way to the national championship yet again?
Well, Ryan Day said when he first got hired back in 2018, you have two goals when you get hired by Ohio State: to beat the team up north and to win the rest of them. So, like, there's no shying away from they need to win every game. Now, is that possible? No. Saban didn't even win every game. So I think this is a really interesting question. Normally in the spring, Ryan Day will establish the goals: beat the team up north, win the Big Ten, win the national championship. Last year, Denzel Burke, the corner who's now with the Arizona Cardinals, just came out and said, hey, it's natty or bust. And that kind of set the messaging for that entire season of natty or bust and leave no doubt and make sure that everybody knows you're the best team in the country. This year, Ryan Day decided that every single day that we talked to him, he was going to remind us how many days until the Texas game. No talk about Michigan. No talk about the playoff. No talk of the national championship game. He understands what August 30th means, because they're going to unveil a national championship number up there and celebrate that one more time. It's going to have the eyes of the college football world are going to be on Columbus. He understands that his team has to be ready, and he understands that it's the national championship means absolutely nothing to the fan base moving forward if you get beat by Texas in the horseshoe. So the expectations and the messaging behind them, it's a little different every year. This year, it's don't worry about anything else, just be ready for when Texas comes. And I think that is super interesting, because it is such a stark contrast from not just last year, but from years past, where everybody knows the goals, and the goals haven't changed. But the messaging of those goals is, you don't even need to worry about those other goals right now. All you got to worry about is Texas. And I'm excited. I don't love that it's the season opener. I wish it was like week two or three, but the expectations are not going to change, but the messaging sure has, and that's just all eyes on Texas.
I know this is going to be 20 years after Texas made its first trip to the horseshoe back in 2005. That started Texas national championship season. That was a night game. I know it was rare at the time. I know it's a little bit rare now too, considering the Fox television contract and what time this game is likely going to be this upcoming August. But a lot of Texas fans have horror stories about their trip to Columbus. Most of them will tell you they didn't have a great experience. My dad will tell you that he didn't have a great experience. But maybe, has anything changed in those 20 years? Should Texas fans expect hostility again? Or may the culture be a little bit different and maybe more celebratory too, considering the noon start and unveiling the national championship number aside all the others?
Yeah, I think you'll probably expect a little different tenor. that game, from what I remember, and I was a young guy, but like that game was kind of supercharged. And I think this game has the potential to be, but with it in all likelihood, we can't say officially, but in all likelihood, not being a night game, does change it a little bit. You know, the fact that Ohio State in the last 20 years, I think, has gotten more angry at its own, it's more angry with itself than it is with other fan bases in the last 20 years. The expectations have just grown to such levels. And I think there's probably a little bit of that at Alabama and at Texas and at Georgia. Like, you get more angry at your own team than you do at your opponent, just because you know what the expectations are with yourself. And so I think if there's anybody that's going to be angry, it's going to be Ohio State fans at themselves more than it's going to be at Texas fans. The bottom line, though, is the last 20 years, the city of Columbus, I related a lot like the city of Austin. Obviously, Austin's bigger, but the city of Columbus has grown. It's the 11th largest city in the country now. It's massive. And I think that has, you know, Ohio State football has grown with it. I think the city offers a lot more than it did 20 years ago. I hope Texas fans do make the trip and, you know, kind of put 20 years behind them and come with an open mind and allow Columbus to kind of welcome them, because I do think that Ohio State fans will reciprocate if it's, you know, if everybody comes in and agrees that they're going to have a good time and watch two top five teams and maybe the number one team against the number two team, I think we're all going to have a great time. So, you know, keep an open mind is what I'll say to Texas fans. Allow yourself to come to Columbus and not remember 20 years ago, but think of Columbus as a new city. And we'll see how it goes. I hope Ohio State fans are better to Texas fans, because I've always heard the horror stories from 20 years ago. But we'll see. You know, that's a long time from now. And I'll just start to beat the drum for Ohio State fans and say, like, hey, let's be nice to these folks. They're coming up and spending money for your economy. Like, let's be nice to them.
Yeah, and Texas had a good experience at Michigan last year. Obviously, winning in the way they did was a big part of that. But I think if you ask a lot of Texas fans who went to Ann Arbor, they really enjoyed it. They got the horns down. They know it's coming, but they were also receptive. And I think they're hoping that in those two decades since, maybe there's been a shift. And like you said, if they were getting angry at their own team, well, they had Justin Zwick that game, so maybe that was a little bit of a part of it. But Spencer, thank you so much. We appreciate you coming on, helping to preview and give a little insight on what's going on in Columbus. And I look forward to doing this on y'all's avenues over on Letterman Row. Should be great in August 30th. Can't get here soon enough.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always appreciate it.